Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of CMC Radio. I'm your host, Rob May. Hope everybody's having a great day so far, getting all set for the work day ahead of you. It's 8:30 here on the East Coast in New York, and we got a nice day ahead of us, mid-60s, and hopefully gearing up for an official end to the cold weather and getting us all set for warmer days ahead. Very excited to have back on the show today for part three of an extended series, Mr. Rudy DeRuyter. Rudy, how you doing this morning?
Very good, thank you.
All right, so Rudy, you basically are the CEO of CKV Bank, is that correct?
Exactly, that's my main job at the moment.
Now, what do you mean by that exactly? What else do you have going on?
In fact, I'm also what they call the family officer of the family who is behind the bank. So I'm the CEO of the bank, and for other reasons, I'm also in charge for the family issues of the shareholder, the main shareholder of our bank. So that's
gotcha.
A combination of jobs, but the main job is, of course, CEO of the bank.
Sure. Now, where are you guys located exactly?
We are located in Waregem, nearby Ghent and Bruges and Ypres, and nearby the cemetery where there were a lot of American soldiers who died in the World War I, and was also visited by President Obama last year.
Wow.
And we are nearby the cemetery located.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So when it comes to your experience in banking, right, I know you've seen a lot of different things kind of going on. What was it about finance that really hooked you into wanting to pursue this as a career?
I was always interested in finance when I was young. And I did my first jobs in banking, in a small bank in Ghent, even at college time, so before university. And I was responsible for what they call the traveler checks, which were very popular in that period in Europe and abroad. And I was responsible for the selling and the buying of traveler checks. And that was, in fact, my first knowledge or my first contact with finance as it. And then I became a client, and then, of course, I remained interested in those businesses because we all work for money, and I was always interested in what how money is created, how money is valuated, how money is spread all over the world. So that's
sure.
my main passion became from there.
Now, we spoke about in previous episodes how, you know, you've seen certain financial crises affect everybody else, right? So at the current time right now, where are we stability-wise, you know, as far as global economy goes?
Global economy, so far it's a bit misty, I would say. I would say the United States are in good shape, certainly in banking. The eastern part of the world, like Asia and China, are a bit slowing down for the moment. And Europe is suffering from a lot of refugees, some terroristic attacks, and low interest rates are having a lot of impact on the banking model so far. And the economic growth figures are at the lower side of the cycle. So they are between 1 and 2%, which is too low at the moment. And Mr. Draghi eased the fact of funding for banking by putting the interest rate down to 0% for lending capacities from banking. And if we have to deposit money, we need to pay minus 15 up to minus 0.35%, which is quite new in Europe to have negative interest rates. And that's really an issue for the future.
Now, what do you do to correct this issue, though?
We give less interest rate to our own deposit holders because we need to pay more, so we give less to the deposit holders. And we try to reprice our mortgages and our lending facilities. So because the banking model is in Europe mainly based on what we call the net interest margin, what's more called by analysts the NIM. It's the difference between the deposit rent we give to our clients and the rent somebody who borrows money pays to us, minus costs, that's the NIM. And small banks in Belgium are mainly affected by the NIM. That's going from 95% to 75%, and a large bank has more different kind of money-making products, so there it's about 70-30%. So that's really the issue for the future, to remain, a sane NIM. The NIM must be sane and will be under pressure for a lot of banks in Europe for the next year coming. And I don't see any interest rates changing or going up for 2-3 years. I think it will remain very low until 2018. That's my personal view.
2018, wow, okay.
Yeah, I know the United States have put up 0.25 basis points, but the second time they didn't do it. So I don't think interest rates will be done in the first 2-3 years. I think we will.
Right.
It's a good thing for the clients because they can borrow money at low interest rates, and so we try to demand to the clients to spend more money and to create inflation, because we don't have any inflation in Europe at the moment, or very low. And the aim of all these measures is exactly to have more consumers and less deposit holders. But regarding the psychological effects, which are often forgotten in the world, is that because of the terroristic attacks, a lot of people are afraid, and so what are they doing? They keep the money on the deposit side, and they won't spend money because they are afraid for the future. So a rather pessimistic view on banking at this stage, but probably influenced by the recent attacks in Brussels. As impact, yes.
Now, in terms of that, now when it comes to things of terrorist attacks and instability, among war threats and all that too. I mean, how does that affect the economy?
Of course, that's always a loss factor for what we call tourists mm-hmm. activity.
Sure.
So mainly the hotels, the restaurants. As you know, Belgium is well known, certainly Brussels is well known for his good food, his pralines, his chocolate. And Bruges and Ghent are main cities where there are a lot of visitors all over the world. Now we see cancellations up to 80% in this
wow.
area. So that's certainly not a good sign for that area. And as I said, the behavioral impact is more people are not spending, and they should
right.
spend more money to re-accelerate the economy. So I hope that, as you announced, the better weather and springtime here in Europe and summertime in Europe and less attacks could have a positive impact on the trust of consumers into the economy, and then we will see a regaining of trust, and then maybe a regaining of spend of money, consumer trust, and then economy will re-accelerate, I hope.
Yeah. Right.
And I think it will be.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now,
it takes some time.
So on the topic of that then, you know, when the Paris attacks occurred, has Paris seen that the re-interest of spending back in the city?
Not yet. So it's it takes more time than everybody expected, and that's the difference between Europe and Americans. Americans are more optimistic, more positive than Europeans in that kind of aspect. So it took more time than we expected. So in Paris, tourist activity restarted after 5-6 months. And I think it will take another up to three months before consumer behavior will change. Because you can build up a reputation, can take years and years, and you can destroy it in 2-3 seconds. And it's a bit the same in consumer trust. You build it up and you build it up, and you can destroy it in a few seconds. But to rebuild it, it takes more time.
Sure, of course. Absolutely.
So Paris, it's November, and we are now April. So it should change in the coming months, yes.
Mm-hmm. And does that typically occur then? So once the warmer weather picks up, because, you know, obviously people are more likely to go out and spend more money.
More optimistic. It's always, if you have a team building meeting and it's raining all day, which happens a lot in Belgium, the psychologic atmosphere is not the same as if you go to the seaside and the sun is shining and you can sit outside and you can do activities outside. It's a lot of other atmosphere and ambiance in the group. So I think this will certainly influence economy and the behavior of the people, I'm sure.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, did you guys feel an effect from the attacks in Brussels, you know, an immediate effect there at your bank? Did you see things occurring?
No, and I know in the United States this is very close because we are only 80 kilometers away from Brussels.
Right.
But in Belgium, 80 kilometers is a lot, so we don't have had any influences, but although there were a lot of friends, family members who are working in Brussels, and they take every day the metro, and the metro attack has had more impact than the bombing on the airport. But in the outside world, it looks the other way around, because the Brussels and the airport is more known. But the impact on the people was more linked to the attack in the metro, because a lot of people are taking that metro to go to work. So it's one of the main lanes in the Brussels metro. So, and a line was very often used by European commissioners because it was linked to the European center of Brussels, not to the Belgian center, but to the European center, which was probably the aim also of the attack, to tackle the station where a lot of European parliamentarians and others are leaving the metro.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And so just to kind of change gears a little bit, I'm curious to know, speaking with somebody, you know, who has the experience, obviously, when you have somebody is young and either has money or has an idea of you know, what they want to do, what are some of the smartest things that a young person can do with money that they already have or that they're, you know, that's coming in? What are some of the best things for them to do in order to hold on to it and build up capital?
I think if you're young, and we're living in a fantastic world at the moment, there are a lot of opportunities around us, but they need to have entrepreneurial skills. They need to start their own business together in a team, and they need to have support by people with experience. I don't talk about money. If they have the money, it's fine. But to have the spirit to go for it and to have the spirit to make errors. Because trial and error is one of the main things as young people. And as we see some successful stories in the past and successful stories going on now, then often it's in your country, in the United States, because their trial and error is expected. And somebody can have a bad experience, but they can learn from it and they can go further. In Europe,
right.
Often if you have an error or you have a mistake, you have a stigma, and it's sometimes difficult to get away from that stigma. That's what we're working on. But as a young guy, start up your own personal firm in something you like, where you're passionate about, and go for
mm-hmm.
it. And I think then capital will start, and you will be successful in the new world. Because if I see in the fintech, in other areas, there are a lot of things going on, a lot of changes, and a lot of opportunities, because it's a fantastic world where we're living in. Business models are going very, very fast. It's not like before that we had business models for 30 years, 40 years. Who talks about Nokia, for instance? Nokia was one of the largest GSM operators. Doesn't exist anymore. When did we talk about gramophone plates? Nobody has a gramophone plate anymore. So business model are very short. So young people should start up and go for it, and something they know, because they know a lot, and you don't need to be interested in something you don't know, but something you know, and then 100%, 150% go for it, take the passion and go for it. Yeah, that was should be my advice for young people, and do it in a team. And look for the market, and the world is global, and the world is very small with internet, FaceTime, WhatsApp, and everything. You can develop
sure.
in a very, very short time with social media and so on. You can develop a very, very interesting business model and a money-making business model.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's my advice.
Absolutely. Sure. Now you guys,
that's
when,
the future.
When you have...
That's the future for the world. Sorry.
Absolutely. When you have people come in, and I'm assuming that you probably do meet with potential hirees that you have, right? People that you're going to bring on to staff, right?
Exactly.
So when you do that, do you see a resume? What stands out to you then in your mind on someone's resume when they come to you looking for a job?
First of all, very important, he needs to have social skills.
Okay.
I will not hire somebody who doesn't enter in the team. And that, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I will not take the smartest guy, even not the other way around, of course, but he needs to have social skills so that he is able to work into the team. And you can see that immediately in the resume. Has he played football? Has he played basket? Has he done something in teamwork? Are there some signs of it? Because if you ask them, are you a team player? Everybody will say, yes, I'm a team player.
Of course.
Then, but if you ask, can you give me some examples? Then sometimes it's still on the other side of the table and it's something's more difficult. But anyway,
right.
That's the first thing. The second thing is I like people who are coming from parents who were independent, who were entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
If you maybe it's a bit stigma, but if your parents had an enterprise, if your parents were entrepreneurs, often you will refine those qualifications and those skills into the people who are coming to the bank. So that's for me very important. And then the ability of learning and the curiosity. And I like to have people who are passionate about the job. Passion.
Sure.
Sure. Not in everything, but if they have passion, they will sure have an extra point. And if they pass that, of course, then we are professionals. Then we have a cooperation with company Hudson, which is also known in the United States, I believe. And then depending on the level of entry, we will have an assessment of 1 day up to 3 days for the top guys. And then we have a total analysis with the Hudson and ourselves. And then we will go to an engagement. Because in Europe, we are very restricted to hire somebody because it's very difficult to fire somebody in our country. Or if you do
right.
so, it's rather expensive.
Right.
It's rather expensive. So if we hire somebody, it's not the salary of 1 year, but we look into a normal retention in a Belgian company is about 10 years. So it's an investment for 10 years. And so it's a lot of important investment, more important than the salary of 1 month. And we look to that into that way. So that's a bit an optimistic view. Yeah, that's also important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And of
now,
course,
how
all the
does other, somebody
yeah, but,
how does a potential candidate show you know, those things, though? I mean, is it all about how they articulate themselves to you in the meeting?
No, of course, the first contact is important. And, you know, after 5 minutes, there is a symbiosis or there is not. And then, of course, those skills need to be proven in the assessment centers because there they need to do it. So we have some cases, business cases we have developed together with the company who does this for us. And then we see on the field how he reacts, what is he doing, how is he reacting with stress, can he fire somebody, and he needs to do it. It's not something he says. We look at his actions because words are fine, but we need to see how he reacts, how he works in group, and we have group sessions and teamworks so we can see his reactions. And this together with the feelings. And also 2-3 people are seeing him in the company, not myself alone. And then we put our opinions together with the assessment. And I think we have a good view then on the candidate. And we will select the best one and we will talk with him through the things we have noticed in the assessment. And if he agrees, we can go further. That's a bit the way how we work.
Sure. Now, how important to you is a college background?
I think in this college background, 4 years ago, I would say it's not so important. But I changed because the world is becoming more complex and you need to have some entry level. And we are not able anymore to give the person, we don't have the time nor the money to help the people get to that entry level. So we expect that the entry level is there by college or university. And also the market is so in Belgium that about 50% has a college degree or a master or a bachelor.
Mm-hmm.
So why should we take people with lower qualifications? But 20 years ago, it was more common in banking that we took persons who were intelligent, even if they didn't have any license or any master or any bachelor. And then we took the time to develop them. But that was rather expensive because for somebody at a medium level, you needed about 24 months. And in productivity for 24 months, in these times, we cannot afford it anymore. So we will look into a certain entry level, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
More than
absolutely.
Before.
So it's definitely changed over the years for you as well. I mean, because a lot of times.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
yeah.
People, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Because the more easy jobs are done by models, or done by algorithms, or done by easy things, and you don't need any human influence there. So the human influence is very linked to complexity and to more general views on banking and the financial world, and not on standardization and easy projects. This needs to be done by computers and by algorithms because it's too expensive, and the cost-income ratio regarding the low net interest margin, as I told, you need to work hard to avoid cost consuming in the area where you can do it on a way which is automatically. And you see also in the fintech a lot of young people who are trying to be active in private banking in the lower end. I mean $1,000, $10,000, which was never done before because it was too expensive for a normal private banker. But now it's done by algorithms and it works perfectly. So we need to have people with creativity and so on. Yeah. So our entry level is high.
Absolutely. And so when right now, in your mind, what are some of the bigger interests that people in Europe and in your specific area would you say people have? I mean, what are they going into? What are people? Is there a lot of interest to be involved in banking, or do you see more of that entrepreneurial side of things, like you mentioned?
Yeah, I see more entrepreneurial kinds with a cooperation with the bank, a joint venture with the bank, less than coming to the bank. It's the banking industry after 2008, after the fall of Lehman, has lost a lot of attractivity for the wise guys in Europe. The wise guys are more interested in entrepreneurial, and then they will like to work together with the bank, of course, in mm-hmm. joint venture of cooperation, that kind of cooperation. That's perfect. Or they're going to the big five consultancies so that they can do a bit of everything. I talk about PwC, Ernst & Young. Those guys are going to those kind of activities. Less than banking. It's like I told maybe before, it's not so sexy to be CEO of a bank anymore. It was before, maybe it was never, I don't know. But the attractivity of the banking industry has had some, by 2008, has had some, some less, it's much more less than before. So it's more difficult to hire talent than before and to keep them.
Sure.
Talent
absolutely.
Retainment is an important issue for banking.
I can see. I can definitely see that. Sure. On a personal level, Rudy, I'm curious to know about your own life when it comes to work and life balance. How important is that to you?
It has always been important for me, but I must agree that in 2008 until 2013, 5 years, I didn't follow the work balance. I worked too much, and I hadn't had the opportunity to change because we had too much work, and the bank was really in crisis, even my own bank. And so we were working the clock around. So, but now I'm more conscious for that, and so my work balance now. I see my work as a hobby and as a passion, and I try to make time for family, sport, and so on. But I must agree that I have not done that for 5 years. It was 5-6 years I have been a bad example in that aspect. And
sure.
You need to watch out. But normally, I respect that. So I build into what we call here in Belgium a cafeteria plan. I build in flexibility for my people and to give them more power on their own life. So I'm looking at the output. I'm not more interested in how they do it. I'm only giving them on the added value and the output. And if they do it at 6 o'clock in the morning or they do it at 6 o'clock in the evening, I don't bother anymore. I'm looking at the output. So my measurement of added value has changed also into the years. Before, it was long working hours and you need to come at 9 and you couldn't leave before 5 and you need to work at night and blah, blah, blah. I'm not interested anymore in that old scheme. I'm interested in the output and the add value they have for the company. And if you do that like that, there is more creativity, out-of-the-box thinking, and I believe in that model for the future.
Absolutely. Well, Rudy, unfortunately, we are running out of time for today's episode. Is there anything you'd like to leave us with today?
I would say remain optimistic and go for it.
Thank you very much, Rudy. We will see you again in about 2 weeks' time, I believe, right?
Yeah, exactly. Perfect.
All right.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Rudy. Thank you, Rudy. Have a great day, all right?
Yes, perfect. Bye.
All right. From everyone here at CMC Radio, thanks for listening. This is Rob May saying we'll see you soon. Enjoy the day, everybody.